Hello and welcome to the iLife.com weekly podcast, episode number 10, for the week of December 14th, 2008. I'm Sydney San Martin.
And I'm Matt Dodd.
And hey, let's get started.
Right, so this week there's nothing too exciting. The year's sort of winding down, but I think we're publicly going to announce that the iLife won't be in attendance of Macworld 2009 for a couple of reasons. And I don't know if, Sydney, you want to detail them, or maybe I'll name a few. One of them is finances and getting ourselves out there and then staying out there is a tight squeeze for me and Sydney. And neither of us want to go alone. So...
No, I mean, I went to WWDC alone, and it was fine, but it gets a little bit annoying, as anyone who's traveled knows, to manage all your stuff and manage, especially when you're waiting in line for a keynote, make sure someone, you know, you have someone to hold your place in line, and hey, for us, make sure you had someone to hold a camera while the other guy talks. So it's just going to work out better if it's this way.
Yeah. And then part of the other reasons are maybe covered later in this podcast, but we won't name them too specifically. But yeah, it's not a final decision if things really change. If they grant us a media pass, we'd have to reconsider this decision. But for now, that's going to stand until things change.
Someday we will be getting media passes, press passes.
Right. Anyway, I mean, that's about it for the site news. Voicemail this week from Keith, but I guess we'll just move on to the Apple news.
Sure. This week in Apple news, Business Week has announced that there's no reason to believe that Steve Jobs won't be at Macworld. And then that was by IDG Vice President Paul Kent just a couple of days ago. He suggested, we should expect Steve Jobs. Everything's on schedule. And then he later corrected himself to say that, you know, an official announcement's going to be made in the next couple of weeks. I don't really have the authority to make that call. And then today, Apple has made an announcement that Steve Jobs will, in fact, not be at Macworld for the first time in a while. This is big news. And not only will Steve Jobs not be at Macworld giving his keynote, he will be replaced by Phil Schiller on the stage at Moscone Center, but this is the last year that Apple will be participating in Macworld and will have a space on the Macworld show floor. Apple's justification in this is that they've been steadily scaling back their trade shows, you know, Macworld New York, Macworld Tokyo, Apple Expo in Paris, Macworld Boston, NABs, or NAB, and this is kind of the last step out of the trade show world. It's kind of sad, Matt. I mean, what's your take on it?
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't see this positive news. It's like kind of a little depressing to think that you'll never be able to go to these shows and see big exhibits from Apple. I mean, you know, it's bad enough that they killed off, the Boston and New York expos before, you know, I was really even old enough to attend them. You know, it's like sort of you're missing out on a whole big part of the tech world. And it's not just with Macworld. It's nothing to do with the Mac or Apple. It's sort of all across the tech industry. And even beyond the tech industry. I mean, the online marketplace and suite of information technology has really changed how people interact and get their information for the consumers and for the developers and businesses. So,
yeah, and I mean that's pretty relevant. I mean it reminds me of something that has been said about Macworld a while, that where there have been kind of rumors and hints that Steve Jobs has never really liked preparing for Macworld. And having to have that deadline of being able of giving his keynote and having something impressive for Apple to show off in that really big way that's traditional for trade shows, and that instead, and also you know, and also that tends to get the rumor mills going at a much higher speed than is healthy for anyone involved in anticipation, and instead they're going with the more modern way of making their announcements when they would like to, letting the internet carry the news around and going at their own more comfortable pace. Not as exciting for us, but better for them in the long run. Because, I mean, Apple, I guess, has become a company that just doesn't really need trade shows anymore. Everyone listens to their announcements and listens to their new and buys their new products without Macworld.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, there is still WWDC, assuming that doesn't change, but.
Yeah, but I mean, WWDC has always had a much different focus, and it's a much more personal experience for Apple developers and an opportunity for Apple developers to just meet
right.
with Apple engineers and see what they have to see. And the keynote's just been kind of a little additional feature and really the only thing the public sees at WWDC. Yeah, hopefully that keynote continues. We'll have to see if Steve Jobs continues to do those keynotes or passes them on to Phil Schiller or someone else at Apple.
Yeah, but, I don't know. Yeah. It's unfortunate, but anyway, in other Apple news, this week, Apple's released 10.5.6. On Monday afternoon, Apple released the long-awaited 10.5.6 update. It fixed a number of the issues that people were having with MobileMe, most prominently, I think. Basically, the MobileMe Sync is now promised by Apple to be within 1 minute of changes made either on the web or on the iPhone. Also in the update is improvements in Mail for performance and reliability, updated SSH, TCP performance reliability, time capsule reliability, pasting text from Microsoft Office into iChat no longer produces an image, I didn't even know about that, and trackpad preference pane for all laptop users. Wait, let me check, hold on, I wonder if the energy light
no,
changed.
It's still a light bulb, it's still a light bulb. Obviously, I mean, what we're talking about
Damn.
Here is
still an incandescent
in the new
light bulb. But yes,
yeah,
in the new Macs, it's a
fluorescent bulb.
You know, like style light bulb. Because they're going
on the energy saver icon. No, yeah, no changes there.
Yeah.
The trackpad icon, though, or the new trackpad preference pane has the icon of the new no button trackpads from the. Current Rev
right.
MacBooks and MacBook Pros,
but does not
no new options.
Yeah,
on my old MacBook Pro, for instance, that whole multi-touch pane that you see on the new ones does not even exist. It's just the usual old trackpad tab from keyboard and mouse preferences. So, a little
and for me, I still have Sorry. The same multi-touch gestures. Nothing new. There's space for a forefinger, but I don't get it. Anyway.
Though there's supposed to be a hack for that. You should try it out.
Yeah, actually, I did hear about something like that, but then I passed it up or something. I don't know. Yes, I should. I should try it out. Anyway. So that's about it. 10.5.6. Universal Delta weighing in at 372 megabytes, and the combo at 668. So, a little big, but... Good.
I'm a little bit
it's
set.
Out
Sorry.
Before the end of the year. Some nice changes. I haven't played with the MobileMe syncing and testing whether it is actually that instantaneous, but I do assume that it's gotten better, so that's good to hear.
I mean, it obviously is still not the push performance that has been shown off on the iPhone, where a change is made on the Mac or on the web, and as soon within seconds that change shows up. But
right.
A minute, 1 minute is not that bad, and that is their promise.
It's getting better, yeah.
And 10.5.6 is not without its little issues. there's some of them are still showing up. A bunch of people have reported problems with Time Machine, reporting permissions problems, and others have seen problems with mail crashing. My mail started crashing. When I loaded up, I discovered it was a plugin I had called, or a bundle that I had installed called GPG Mail, used with, you know, to encrypt your messages. So a lot of people out there probably don't have it, but enough do that it's causing a little bit of a problem. And yeah, I mean, there are always going to be more issues that crop up, and hopefully Apple can push out fixes for them or workarounds quickly enough. We'll see.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Oh, all right.
Is it my turn?
Yeah, why don't you take the next story?
Okay, yeah, I guess it is. All right. Next story, the iPhone shipped to your home. People who can think that far back in the iPhone's history will remember that the original iPhones didn't have to be purchased in stores. That you could purchase them in stores. You could get them. You could buy it online on Apple's website and have it shipped to your house and activated at home. That is back, sort of. Until now, if you went onto Apple's website and tried to order an iPhone, you would be taken through a little process where you could get pre-approved and then get sent over to an Apple or AT&T store to make the final purchase. Now, on AT&T's website, the iPhone has appeared along with all the other phones as an option for something that you can order by mail. Now, you still cannot do it without a contract. You have to make all your agreements and virtual signatures and plan selections. But then at the end of the process, the iPhone gets shipped to your home. And you get to do at-home activation like before, where you plug your iPhone into iTunes, authenticate, and put in your account information, and your iPhone gets activated right there on your desk. But nice little change. Pretty minor. And AT&T is also offering, this is kind of a cool thing, refurbished iPhones for $50 less than their new full-priced brothers. So, if you're looking
with shipping,
upgrade yourself to an iPhone 3G, now is probably not a bad time.
Yeah. Free shipping.
Yeah.
Otherwise, in some other iPhone news, the 3G unlock is nearly ready. The dev team, the group of iPhone hackers, have confirmed that their unlock for the 3G phones is almost ready for public consumption. The unlock is fully functional and is just being packaged and tested. So it will not unlock iPhone 3Gs with a baseband version of 2.1107 or earlier. The release is planned for New Year's Eve, so before the end of this year. I believe you can't, if you update it to 2.2, that include a new baseband?
It did indeed. I mean, basically, if you're going to want to unlock your iPhone, you will have had to... I messed up the order of words there. You will. You need to have been updating your iPhone with custom-built firmwares using the dev team's own program called Pwnage Tool to prevent those updates from also updating the modem in your iPhone.
Yeah.
If you've just been installing updates through iTunes, then we don't know the details, but whatever vulnerability is allowing this unlock to work has been removed, and it's quite possible that they'll be releasing an updated unlock that can unlock any iPhone 3G, but for now, yeah, only the ones with that earlier baseband. Pretty minor issue for most of you guys out there, but yeah, New Year's is the date for that. And before Christmas, they plan to release a video of the process, but I think they've earned their reputation by now as pretty reputable source for software like this. So, cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Now we need a way to get the iPhones.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you want to take this last iPhone story of this week?
Sure thing. This one's a little bit on the unlikelier side.
Yeah.
The website idealschina.com, and you can get their story. I'm forgetting to give these out. You can get their story at tinyurl6r4qmw. Has announced that there is an iPhone Nano in production. They're in contact with an iPhone case and skin maker called, I don't really know how to pronounce this, Experts. XSKN.
Yeah.
X-Skin?
If you don't
like
know
that?
Who they are, they're the people who actually leaked, well, this site through XKSN or X-Skin or whatever, are the people who leaked the 3G case for the first time to the world. So...
Yeah, right.
They also
and the little minor changes in the form factor.
Right. Yeah, they got all that stuff off the bat, correct, and leaked it at the time, and it was questioned, but it turned out to be correct. They also sort of screwed up their track record by releasing a bunch of iPhone. No, it wasn't the iPhone Nano because this is what they're releasing now, but it was the iPod Nano. Case design changes that did not come true before September. So all the rumor sites say that they're not exactly their most reputable source because they have a mixed track record at this point. But
yeah, absolutely.
Anyway,
but
continue.
They have announced that they have received specs on the dimensions for an iPhone Nano from Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I mean, absolutely, Matt. Their record is a little bit questionable at the moment, but they released renderings of the cases that they're designing and that they say they're already manufacturing for the said iPhone Nano. And I mean, hey, if it exists, if it's real, it looks pretty cool. It basically is similar to a regular iPhone, but squished down a little bit.
Yeah.
And they say it would be the same height as an iPod Nano.
Right, it's the same height as an iPod Nano, but the same width of it as an iPhone. And it's interesting because there's always been all these rumors about the iPhone Nano, but there was a story broke through the iLounge, I believe, earlier this summer about a 2.7-inch touchscreen, I think, that Apple had, and there's a great picture of it next to the 3.5-inch one that's on the current iPhones and iPod Touches, and it was basically about that, or breaking that Apple was experimenting with a bunch of these new, smaller touchscreens, and that they should see their way into products soon. And some people think it may be the iPhone Nano, but I personally think it's not going to come true. Steve Jobs went on saying that, you know, like, Babe Ruth only hit one home run that he knew of, so, you know, why should Apple have multiple products of something that's doing quite well? I don't know what to say. It would be kind of a nightmare if you think about it, because right now the development platforms are uniform, more or less, that it makes it quite easy for you to develop applications across all four devices that have slightly different hardware. And if you think
you've got the
iPhone Nano, oh, and like what
Go
do
ahead.
They limit on it, and all this other kind of stuff, it could sort of spiral out of. But yeah, I don't know. They also note that they said they'll have a picture of it within by December 20th, I think, give a very specific date. So we will see if that comes true. Who knows? But I'm doubtful on that one.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll see. Let's see. What else?
I'll take the... I guess I lied. That wasn't the last story about the iPhone. This is one about the... this is actually the last one. This week, Microsoft released Sea Dragon for the iPhone. Basically, it's a application that allows you to explore very, very large and high resolution images without downloading them to the phone. So basically you can browse these really large images in Sea Dragon, and yeah, I mean it works on your iPhone.
Well, you want me to talk a little more
about
it? I poked around at the program when it came out.
Yeah, you've played with it. It's not an original program. It is something that has been ported to the iPhone, or it's an iPhone app of an existing Flash app, but Sydney, you can go ahead, because I haven't ever played with it, actually.
Okay, well, yeah, sure. I mean, SeaDragon is a Microsoft technology more than it is a specific application that they've been talking about for a while, and it's, I mean, you've probably seen online those Flash application or little Flash applets that, or if you're looking through a huge panorama or something, you can zoom in and out and it kind of loads tiles as you go, a little bit like Google Maps. SeaDragon's kind of like that, but it's much, much smoother. So, I mean, like, the main implementation is a little Ajax widget that you can implement on your website. And, I mean, if you're using it and you're zooming in, you can kind of see the pixels at their original size as you start to zoom in, and they seem to kind of shrink down and just reveal more detail. It's a really smooth implementation. And Microsoft claims that it there's no performance hit as the images grow larger. I mean, some of the images that they have as demos in this iPhone application are something like 1.2 gigapixels. And you can just sit there on the iPhone and, you know, pinch out and, or double tap and just zoom in, and it's really smooth, and see it, everything at its full resolution. Obviously, it's a little bit impractical for the iPhone because it's pretty bandwidth intensive to have to load all this information about the images, you know, as you're moving around and load at different resolutions. But as a proof of concept, it's great, and it could, depending on how it's used, actually save bandwidth. It could allow browsers to just load smaller images at first, and then load the larger images only after you zoom in on them. And hey, I mean, what can you say? The touchscreen works pretty darn well for it.
Right.
They have a bunch of example images up. So, I mean, hey, give it a try. It's free. It's a little technology demo, but it's something else cool to show off on your iPhone, like Google Earth or something.
Mm. Yeah. I've been just looking at it right now, real quick. It's pretty cool. I haven't downloaded the app, though. I have to do that. Anyway, the last story. I don't know, Sydney, you want to take it or I'll take it?
I'm sure. I mean, it's a pretty minor thing.
Yeah.
We discussed last week that Apple was in talks with, it was EMI, I believe, right?
No, it was all four of the major labels. They already have.
Oh, okay, sorry.
DRM free for EMI.
Oh, right. They already have. I'm getting mixed up here.
Yeah.
To make the entire iTunes store DRM free, and, you know, make iTunes Plus the norm, and that has not happened, obviously, as you have probably noticed. And just long story short, Apple is still in talks with the labels, and obviously has not come to any agreement, so we're gonna have to wait on that.
Yeah, there.
But
there's been some breaks about the talks and how some of the music labels want variable pricing as always, and some want to have control over the pricing versus Apple. And I don't know. I guess it's not ready quite yet. But hopefully they are still finalizing talks or in final stages of debating the stuff. But anyway, that's about it for Apple News this week. Some cool stuff that we've done. I actually have something to share this week. Not that cool, though. I downgraded to Flash 9.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was sick and tired of things not working the way they should. Sometimes you load a page that had Flash ads, and it would give you all these problems. You know, it's like, you know, this page cannot be loaded because blah, 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 blah. You know, you can continue or abort script. And also,
no, I know your problem. Your problem is that you don't block ads enough. You can block ads more.
I have been increasing my ad blocking. But yes, I know some do escape. But most importantly, the WordPress uploader that allows you to upload, the Flash uploader that allows you to upload, you know, multiple files and edit them really fast, is broken in Flash 10. And it's not, I really should know the name of this, but it's not a WordPress developed application. It's developed through some other people who said that they're working on it, but basically the reason that it doesn't work in Flash 10 is that Adobe blocked the API that allows access to the file structure for security reasons. And it doesn't work at all. spot. Anyway, go ahead. You probably have something more that's cooler than...
I don't have too much. I mean, I've been all about the iPhone applications lately. And a couple that I have come across in the last few weeks have just blown me away in one way or another. Have been... Well, one of them is Amazon Mobile's, or Amazon.com's application. Now, just in general, it's a really, really smooth implementation of what you would expect in an Amazon.com application. You can log into your account, you can track your orders, you can search for items, you can buy items, and it just all works very, very nicely. But of its coolest feature, its coolest feature, and one that I would, that I'm not going to go too in depth into, but the workings of it is kind of cool, is a feature where you can take a picture of anything you want, as long as it is something that may or may not make, that should be able to be bought on Amazon.com, and you wait 2 to 20 minutes and check the application again, or check your email if you have email notification turned on, and magically it gets identified and you have the opportunity to buy it, whatever it was you took a picture of, immediately on Amazon.com.
Yeah.
So even if you just want to do like a quick price check on something you see in a store or whatever, it's a nice way to do it. And it's just really fun to play with.
Yeah.
I've got to say.
I did play with this application myself, but...
And let's see, another little iPhone application that just came out today, and I have not purchased it yet because it is a little bit expensive. It is, I think it's $30 or $40. Let me check before I already said it, but... loading. It's LogMeIn Ignition, and it's $30, $29.99. And if you haven't heard of LogMeIn, it's a remote, like a remote desktop, a remote access service. And, I can't think right now. I can't look at my iPhone and talk at the same time. There's a free version, and basically it gives you remote access to your computer from anywhere, and it pushes through firewalls on both ends, and you can log in just from a web browser by going to their website. It works between Mac to PC, PC to Mac, Mac to Mac, PC to PC, whatever you want. And now they have this iPhone client, which does the same thing on iPhone. So you can just from wherever you are, whether you're on the cell phone network, on Wi-Fi, you can open up the application and have remote access to your computer. You just need to install the software on there. And there's always going to be a time, no matter how much stuff you put on your iPhone, when you want to get to something you have on your computer, and this is a great solution.
Yeah.
Aside from the many, there are many VPN apps out there on the App Store, and if you can get them set up properly and get them to work, it's great, and they will be much less expensive. But if you just want an all-in-one solution, LogMeIn has been a pretty reputable company, and has had very nice products for Mac in the past, and I would recommend it. But without having used it, I would be shocked if it weren't very good. Put it that way.
Yeah.
All right. Any other cool stuff going on?
Actually, I did see something cool. I don't know if you saw it, but this may only apply to Sydney and I, or those in our area. Chase has an application now.
Chase?
Bank? Chase Bank, yes.
Really?
Yeah, go check it out. It's cool. It's got a...
I'm going to be checking it out, really? I've been waiting for them to do that, because Chase's mobile offerings are a little bit sparse.
Yeah, it's really crappy. But...
The application? Or the
application's great.
Or it came before it?
It works nicely. You can check the balances, you log in, and you approve the device. It's kind of funny, but... after that's done, you can go in and, like, use the features that you see online, check your balance, transfer, do some fairly simple stuff. It's also got like a bunch of links for contacting support, which you just click on and then they bring up a phone call. And the third one and the most important, I guess the coolest feature is the ATM locator. It just uses location services to locate you an ATM without entering any zip codes or crap like that.
I am downloading it right now as the GSM noises in the background may indicate. That's nice.
But yeah.
Now, it's good to note that there's been a partial solution to this in the past, which is a program or a website called Page Once, which, if you haven't heard of it, you should check out. And we may have mentioned it once before on the show. It's a service that brings together any and all accounts that you can think of in one place. It could be bank accounts, utilities, frequent flyer accounts, all the way up to and including your YouTube profile, and just lets you launch an application and have get information about all your accounts in one place. It's read-only. You can't, make transactions on it, but I have been using it up until now just to keep an eye on my transaction history and my account balances, and it works well for what it does. But a dedicated application for your bank, can't compete with that. So, cool.
Yeah. Anyway, the final section for the show this week, I guess, Sydney, you wanted to take this with selecting text. I don't know. Can you tell us?
Hey, if you have an idea, feel free to step forward with it. Otherwise, I have another quirky little tip up my sleeve or CD drive, whatever I have here, that I would love to share. Do you have anything?
No, I don't. I was waiting for you.
Okay. Oh, that's wonderful. Okay. Okay, sorry. I was just typing in my password here to download that Chase mobile app. I'm excited. We aren't being paid to talk about Chase Bank.
No, we both have Chase because we're from New Jersey, and it's one of the better banks around.
Yeah. And it hasn't gotten bought by anyone.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to. And anyway, let's not get into financial crisis. All right. Yeah, I have another quirky little tip that just has made my life easier every once in a while. And it's not the kind of thing you'll use continuously, but when you do have to use it, it's nice. You ever want to select a large block of text on a website or web page, whatever? You have to. Well, I mean, there are a few ways you could do it. You can start selecting. You can select a little. Like if you open up a website, with a bunch of text on it, you can select a little bit and then scroll down to where you want to select the rest of it and hold down Shift key and, and click to. Well, I mean, or actually, that's similar to what I'm suggesting. Basically, you can start selecting and then try to drag while you're selecting and keep dragging and let go and hope you get the block you want. There's actually a different way. You know how in a regular document you can click to put the insertion point somewhere? Mm-hmm. And then, you see it blinking there? And then shift-click somewhere else in the document to select all the text in between there? You can actually do this. And some of you may have been doing this forever, but I certainly hadn't heard of it until I noticed it happening recently. There's actually a virtual invisible insertion point going on in pretty much in most applications, in a lot of applications, wherever you can select text. So Safari is a great example of this. So you can just click, regular old click, anywhere you want on the page, and then shift click anywhere else you want on the page, or even use modifiers, whatever, and that selection will appear out of nowhere. So if you've noticed if you accidentally shift click somewhere on a web page and notice some random bit of text being selected, there's your explanation. So, tip of the week: use it, enjoy it, hate it.
Nice.
Suggest more. Email us.
Yeah, if you want to.
But there you go.
Get in contact with us. My email is matt@theilife.com. It's theilife.com. Sydney.
Oh, all right. I'm Sydney, SIDNEY, no spaces, at theilife.com.
There you go. So for this episode number 10, that's about it. I guess, see you guys next week. Good night.